welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Okay, so, the year 1994.
Clear and present. You didn't do your intro.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1994 movie Clear and Present Danger, directed by Philip Noyce and starring Harrison Ford in his last appearance as Jack Ryan. Now, tell me what you thought of this movie upon rewatch.
This movie wasn't good.
I think it had all the elements of a good movie.
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure. I think it didn't, you know, Hunt for Red October was, of course, a high mark for a movie.
Yeah.
For a series. And then Patriot Games was very different from Hunt for Red October, but it had a lot of the action elements and a lot of the espionage elements. And even though it was, you know, it was of course the Irish mob, Sinn Féin and Irish terrorism and all of that kind of element, which was geopolitically topical at the time, it was a good movie. It had some good action. It had some good dialogue. It had some banter. It had some funny parts. Had some drama. This movie, though, it's like they didn't really have, you know, the Cold War villain. They really didn't have, you know, there was no really clear villain as much as this was kind of a almost like a political statement of a movie.
Oh yeah, most definitely. The villain was the government he worked for.
Yeah, and so to me the plot was just...
See, I thought it had all the elements of a good movie plus an hour. Because this is a 2.5 hour movie.
Yeah, it was long. I didn't realize how long it was. And there was some really good performance out of it. William Dafoe did a great job.
Oh, I thought a lot of the actors did a great job. I just thought, let me just give you the quick and dirty. It was what I thought. My understanding is that Ann Archer had a lot more originally in her role, but it got cut.
Yeah, there's no room in the movie for it.
I think they should have cut all of her part out of it. I also think that every time, like, the pace of the movie got kind of, you know, there's an action scene that kind of ramped up the pace, they slowed it down for some goofy humor or they had a scene of this long scene of a flag-draped coffin arriving because of a fallen soldier or a State Department person. Then later they had a military funeral scene. Now I realized that you needed the military funeral because that's Admiral Greer. That's an important character.
Yeah. You killed him off.
Yeah. But you didn't need both of those big long scenes.
Yeah.
You didn't need, I mean, as much as I like, the guy, Greg German, who played, Fish, I think in Ally McBeal as the computer wizard.
Yeah.
As much as that was fun to have him there, it was not necessary, and it slowed things down.
Yeah, this movie was going a lot of different directions is the problem. I think it was going too many directions at the same time.
Yeah, I think so too. Like when they got the commandos, you didn't need to see the scene of the commandos training. No, you didn't.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but I think, you were paying for Benjamin Bratt, probably not a lot though in those days, but
oh no, but you, I mean, you know, he definitely is. you know, he gets quality screen time. And there's a lot of good actors in this movie. And, you know, there's some good action scenes, too. You know, the, well, do you want to just get into the plot and kind of go from there?
Sure.
Okay. So the plot opens with a Coast Guard patrol boat stopping a suspicious yacht. And they discovered that an American businessman and his family have been brutally murdered by several men. Now, the murdered men happen to be a close, or the murdered man happens to be a close friend of the president, President Bennett, played by Donald Moffat. Donald Moffat is not James Cromwell. That was my note. Although, for a couple minutes, I thought he was.
Oh, Cromwell would have been a great choice.
Yeah, well, Donald Moffat, though, however, is a favorite because he was in the Thing from 1981, so he had a good role.
And to me, his performance reminded me of an emulation of Bush Sr.
Yeah, kind of. Yep, and I think that was on purpose.
Yeah, because I think that's the time this movie came out.
Yeah.
Or was filmed, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and of course, the novel was written before it, so yeah.
Right.
It would have been just into the Clinton administration, but yeah, you're talking about a Bush Sr. type president.
Right.
And turns out, of course, that the man was killed because of his ties to a drug cartel. He apparently had skimmed over $650 million from the cartel. So the president tells his national security advisor, James Cutter, played by Harris Yulin, who's been in everything. He's a great bad guy.
Yeah.
That the Colombian drug cartel represent a clear and present danger to the U.S. So that means that they can go after and unofficially gives him permission to kill the men responsible for his friend's murder. Which is kind of funny, because in 1994, that was like a scandalous thought. In 2015, it's like, oh, let's just send a drone. Like, oh yeah, yeah, we'll kill two drug dealers with a drone yesterday, you know, no big deal. Like, we can kill American citizens overseas too, it doesn't matter. I mean, this is not a big scandal now. But at the time, you know, illegal war and whatnot. So, in the meantime, of course, Admiral Greer has been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and he's going to die. So Jack is appointed to Deputy Director of Intelligence, and he has to go before Congress and request funding for ongoing CIA operations in Colombia.
Now, doesn't this seem to you like a pretty big jump in succession planning?
Yeah. Yeah, you mean as far as his career path?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I mean, out of all of the other people in the agency, like, just boom, boom, boom. So, especially because, first of all, he's quit repeatedly, and he's quote-unquote just an analyst.
Exactly, yeah. That was his real strength as an analyst.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it does seem. And you know what? The guy needs a decent haircut. Has Harrison Ford always had a bad haircut?
Well,
he have like
I'm the last person to talk about hair.
Well, no, but I mean, does he just have cowlicks for days, or do they?
Yeah, he's never had great hair in movies, and I don't know if that's just his style or what.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Handsome guy, bad hair. Yeah. So Ryan gets a crazy promotion to deputy director, and I'm sure in the book this is, you know, if this were a miniseries or a series itself. Him going before Congress is setting up a thread that they're going to weave back later on. And unfortunately, 2.5 hours later, you don't remember or care.
Yeah, it almost makes you wonder if they were planning this as a two-parter.
Well, yeah, it could have been. Yeah, again, in 2015, they would have. Why not?
And it made a huge amount of money.
Sure.
Because the budget was $45 million, and they grossed in the U.S. $122 million.
Yeah, that's a hit.
So, yeah, I mean, they could have easily, but I suspect Harrison Ford probably didn't want to do another one.
Yeah, well, and who knows what else was on his agenda, too, at that time.
Yeah.
But, of course, now, Cutter, the bad guy, the politician bad guy, turns to the CIA's Deputy Director for Operations, Bob Ritter, played by Henry Zierney, who, as it turns out, is not Adrian Pasdar. Although for a couple minutes, I thought he was.
Oh, wow. From Heroes?
Yeah. Adrian Pasdar has been in a lot of fun stuff.
Mr. Natalie Maines?
Oh, is that, were they married?
Yeah. Well, they have kids together.
Oh, wow. Cool. No, he was, have you ever seen the show Prophet?
I have not.
It was like 6 episodes and I probably got canceled after 3, but it's bonkers and awesome. If you get a chance, it's called Prophet and it stars Adrian Pasdar.
Okay. Yeah. They were married. He married Natalie Maines in 2000.
Wow. Cool.
And they have 2 children. I'm assuming that they're 2 children, Jackson Slade Pasdar and Beckett Finn Pasdar.
Excellent. Well, I'm not here to criticize people's kids' names.
In the awesome musical documentary, Shut Up and Sing, he is actually in it. So,
oh, sweet.
Which is a fantastic, fantastic film, by the way.
Oh, well, I've heard good things, but I think I just got, you know, burned out about the political stuff.
It's not, but it's, so, Tangentville, it's actually less about the politics and more about them and how, what was going around them and how they handled it.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty fascinating documentary. I really recommend it.
Okay,
so,
cool.
It has some good music performances too, but it's the story of what happened because they actually had a documentary crew following them around as it was happening. So it's pretty amazing.
Oh, cool. Excellent. Did I already tell you about the documentary, The Armstrong Lie?
No.
About Lance Armstrong?
No.
That is also a very good documentary because he was having a documentary film crew following him around for his his return to the Tour de France in 2009. And
did they catch him doping?
No, but that's when the scandal came around and they realized they couldn't, and he didn't win the Tour de France, so that made it less dramatic in the from the documentary standpoint. And I can't remember the name of the director, but he's a pretty famous documentary filmmaker. So the doping scandal kind of whipped up, but he was still denying. And then a couple years later, he confessed to Oprah, of all people. And then they finished the documentary and talked to him about it. And it was,
Alex Gibney was the director.
Yes, 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 yes. So
Oprah, man, she is fucking a force of nature.
Oh yeah.
The whole Duggar thing was Oprah.
Well, that's a strange thing because somebody dropped the dime to Oprah's people about them in what, 2008, but then somebody dropped the dime to In Touch Weekly.
In Touch, yeah.
In 2015. Somebody has another axe to grind, so you almost wonder if it's the Honey Boo Boo people.
Yeah, maybe Denny Hastert was molesting
them. Fire me for a morals clause, says Mama, whatever her name is from Honey Boo Boo, because she's moved in with the guy who molested her daughter. So it's like,
I'm not laughing at child molestation.
Not great. Anyway, so we've recommended this, but Prophet and Shut Up and Sing and The Armstrong Lie. Yes, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and those are all great things to watch. This movie, not so much.
This movie is fine if you've got 2.5 hours and want to do furniture. You have to like furniture to polish or something.
Did you think it was a fine movie? I used to like this movie, but on rewatch, I was like, it just didn't do anything for me.
I thought it was more. It was like watching a rerun of like Chips. Or of, I don't know, even like the Andy Griffith Show or something, or like The Love Boat, where, you know, it's kind of 1994 as far as the acting, and it's a little bit over the top, and they're trying to be funny. They're trying to split that line between being action. It's kind of like the A-Team is what it is. The A-Team that gets bogged down because it's also trying to do the serious Tom Clancy, like, technical part of...
I think it was very schizophrenic because you're right. It had some very, very frantic, frank, just earnest, very intense moments. Like, when Ritter was like, do you have one of these? You know, those very serious moments in the movie. And then you're right. There's just these ridiculous moments that the movie would have been served better without.
Well, and yeah, because even the scene with Ritter, there's no real gravitas to it, because
there's no resolution to it, really. I mean, there's kind of an indirect resolution, but there were so many pieces of this movie that were put in here that I think were a story arc that were never realized.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
And I think that's what I found frustrating on the watch, is that, you know, as watching it now, I'm like, I already know all of these pieces aren't going anywhere, and now they just frustrate me because I want them to come to fruition.
And there's just so much going on, you don't get enough time with any of them to make it work. I mean, I guess it's like watching an episode of NCIS or something like that, where you have a little bit of procedural and a little bit of action and then a little bit of quirky banter, you know? It's like, or like Bones. Have you seen Bones?
No.
I saw a couple episodes of Bones way back in the day and just thought, well, who, you know, this is like some autistic girl being a crime scene investigator, whatever. Not so interesting. Well, as I was editing, I think the other day, you know, it was all the more recent episodes of Bones. It's all like crazy soap opera stuff. It's all like sexual innuendo in and amongst the solving of the murder. It's like, oh man, you know, which I guess has its place. I mean, that's what Silk Stockings and Hunter and all those shows were about. Moonlighting, right? Although that was more of a comedy.
Moonlighting was a dramedy.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't trying hard enough to be an action movie, although it kind of fits in that 80s action movie or early 90s action movie, like the Arnold Schwarzenegger Commando type movies, you know? And actually, the scene with when the SUVs get caught in the ambush, mm-hmm. they still use that for training for, like U.S. government agencies use that particular scenario for training.
The scenario of getting backed into an alley?
Yeah, and how you deal with that.
Huh.
And they also, it's funny, the Oval Office set, they use the set from the movie Dave because it was already built.
I read that.
Yeah, it's kind of great.
That made me chuckle.
So it looked good.
Yeah. You haven't seen Dave.
I have not seen Dave. It should be on our list somewhere.
It is on our list.
Yeah. So,
great movie.
Yeah. Well, I've heard it's good. Our grandmother liked it.
Yeah.
It's got Kevin Kline. Who doesn't like Kevin Kline?
It's got Sigourney Weaver.
Oh, well, yeah. Who doesn't like Sigourney Weaver?
And Ben Gazzara and
Gazoon Height.
Yeah.
So, okay. Sorry. Back to Clear and Present Danger. So, not Adrian Pasdar, Ritter, sets up this Black Ops team with the help of John Clark, Willem Dafoe, who in this period of his career is great. Did you ever see Boondock Saints?
No.
Okay. Boondock Saints is well worth watching, but it's where Willem Dafoe goes off a fucking ledge as far as like crazy acting. In this, he is just reliable action guy Willem Dafoe. So, you have him as the retired Black Ops team guy who recruits his guys, among which are Benjamin Bratt, who is the leader of the ground force, and who is the sniper? Domingo Chavez, Raymond Cruz from The Closer and Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
You know, that's fun, I suppose. But again, it's kind of goofy. They're having the sniper training and in the ghillie suits and sneaking up on him, and it's like, that's kind of a, like, Sergeant Bilko kind of thing. So, then we meet the head of one of the drug gangs, Ernesto Escobedo. I wonder who that name sounds like. Who's played by Miguel Sandoval, who's been in The Medium and everything else.
Yeah, he's been around.
He's been around forever. And he's the buffoonish drug lord. Brutal, but buffoonish. And then we have his right-hand man, his intelligence officer, ex-Cuban Castro employee, Felix Cortez, played by Joaquin de Alameda, who's also been in a ton of stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he may have been in The Saint.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. That's a good question.
No, I'm joking.
Oh, actually, he may have been played by Val Kilmer, actually.
That's what I'm saying.
So through a contact, Cortez. Oh, by the way, through a contact, we have this whole scene of Felix seducing the FBI director's secretary, using her to get information. And again, that was probably a great thing in a thriller novel, but it was just too much for this movie. Because it was yet another thread you had to go and weave back in. So we have this whole Moira Cortez plot. But the FBI director, played by Tom Tammy from Source Code, is visiting Colombia to negotiate with the attorney general about frozen money. But they end up trying to assassinate Jacobs. And that's where you have the scene of Jack Ryan kind of not really saving the day. Actually, he's like the only survivor pretty much of the ambush.
Yeah. He was the only one that lives.
Yeah, bad deal. So Cortez ends up being the bad guy. He's the weasel. He's going to play all the both ends against the middle and try to get rid of Escobar and the other drug dealers in Colombia so he can take over the big cartel. And in his deal with Cutter and the American government, he can make this whole thing work. So they end up, after this little deal, they end up like bombing a house using like Tom Clancy stuff. Like they're painting the laser signal on the vehicle that they want the laser guided bomb to hit. So it's all very high tech, whiz bang, Tom Clancy, you know, stuff shoved into this movie that doesn't quite have that tone. Anyway, in the meantime, you have this whole scene with the computer whiz Petey, Greg German, who's using a very, very impressive looking, it turns out it's a tape drive from 1994. Looks like a supercomputer or something.
Well, it was a tape silo.
Yeah, it's just a backup system, really. So that computer wasn't going to do any heavy lifting. It was just going to be basically writing your data.
Yeah. Those tape drives are still in use. Anyway, at Fred's, we're still using those when I worked for Fred's.
Wow. So. Well, I'm sure they're impressive, right?
The mainframe uses them, so.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
You know, now, I mean, you could probably have a couple of hard drives that give you the same amount of space, right?
Yeah.
Although maybe not. I mean, again, there's a lot of tapes in those tape drives.
Well, and the silos hold lots of data that really they're good for static storage, so you store stuff on them. And it's, even though it degrades, it's more, you don't have mechanical failure, you have magnetic failure. Yeah. So
it's like physical data rather than electronic
right.
data.
Correct. So in some government instances, like the IRS, you can't send them electronic, it has to be magnetic tape.
Ah. Yeah.
Because the IRS is using computers from 1923.
Oh, let me tell you about, and this is all public information, during my career, the state of Alaska, who I don't work for, their public safety information network computers, I started in 1996, they had this project called APSIN 2000, where they're moving from the DOS-based computer to a more, you know, finally like a GUI system, you know, where you could use a mouse and whatnot. And after spending like $14 million, they just scrapped it. And so they just kind of patched up what they had. And then a couple of years ago, they started anew, I think in 2010. And they spent like 20-some million dollars. And they just scrapped that also. Because they couldn't, the project team or whatever, the company working on the project, just couldn't come up with any end date for it. So they blew through like $30 million and got nothing to show for it. And they're still using a DOS-based system.
That's like the city of Portland. They had the water billing system for the city of Portland. This started back like when I first moved here. They needed a new billing system. So they designed and built one. And they spent like, I don't know, it was some crazy amount of money. The time they spent like I don't know, like five or $10 million, And then it turns out it didn't work, and people hadn't gotten their bills for like a year. And so they scrapped that, and then they had to spend another like $10 million on a different system.
Oh, yeah. And so people are getting rich. I mean, if not rich, people are getting paid lots of money. You know, maybe the companies themselves will end up going bankrupt or whatever. But people are getting paid like more than a living wage to do this work that goes nowhere. Not to mention all of the trips and wining and dining and consultation fees and stuff along the way. There's got to be big business in scamming governments for our technology.
I'm sure there is.
So I don't know. Yeah, we have actually the city has a has moved to is it Kronos SAP for the payroll system?
Yeah.
They are tremendously over budget and have not completed the project yet.
Yeah. SAP is the greatest software that exists, but it is the most resource intensive to set up correctly. And you have to have your foundation of the software just perfect, or you have to tear it all down and start over. Kronos is a pretty easy implementation on its own. But when you integrate Kronos with something else, it's the something else that becomes the problem.
Well, and you know, you're changing, you have all these city departments that had their individual payroll departments. And the promise of Kronos was you can get rid of all those employees because you were going to make your supervisory staff, your line supervisors, into payroll clerks.
Yeah. Good luck with that.
Well, that's the thing. So anyway, okay, back to the movie. And I mean, again, there's not a, I mean, the movie, like I said, I had a pleasant time watching it. I just kept seeing things that you could have taken out of it because I knew that the time was just killing me. You know, I tried to do the same sort of thing with Zero Dark Thirty. This is 2.5 hours, and that one needed to be that long, but it had a tone that ran through the whole thing. This tone went everywhere. It just went all over the place. And in the end, and we could just skip to the end, they end up this whole thing about buying a helicopter, riding on a company check.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning, I'm here to rent the Huey.
Sorry, we don't rent it anymore. But it is for sale.
How much is it?
$2 million.
My pilot and I would have to take it for a test flight.
Yes, of course. You just have to leave a deposit.
How much is that?
$2 million.
Would you take a company check?
Yes.
She's a big son of a bitch, ain't she?
You have any time in this type?
9 o'clock.
Then you have a chase scene, fight scene, helicopter scene that kind of doesn't have the impact. I know that the director, Philip Noyce, wasn't happy with the ending because it wasn't as climactic as, say, the SUV ambush scene in the middle.
No, it was a very flat ending.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but then you have this confrontation between Ryan and the President of the United States. And I thought that was actually pretty well acted, although Harrison Ford with his bad hair just looks like a wet chicken. He's just very unhappy.
Jack, I'm glad you're here. Sit down. Can I get you anything?
No.
Come on, sit down.
I would prefer to stand, sir.
Some things have gone on here that I'm just becoming aware of. I was kept in the dark, as you were, for a very long time. Troubling things.
Yeah.
And now we have to sort them out. We have to figure out who is responsible for what and what to do about it. And we have to do this very delicately, otherwise people might get the wrong idea.
We have to lie.
Did I say that?
No, you didn't.
You're upset.
I'm upset.
Well, it's understandable. You mind if I give you a bit of advice? Of course, you know this because you're a smart guy. You should never make important decisions while you're upset.
You did. And American soldiers and innocent civilians are dead because of it.
I never ordered any...
No, don't even think about playing that game with me. I will not let you dishonor their memories by pretending you had nothing to do with it.
How dare you come in here and lecture me?
How dare you, sir?
How dare you come into this office and bark at me like some little junkyard dog? I am the President of the United States!
It gives me no pleasure to do it, sir. As Acting Deputy Director of Intelligence, it is my duty to report this matter to the Senate Oversight Committee.
You're not going to do that?
I'm not.
No, no. You've got yourself a chip in the big game now. You're going to tuck that away. You are going to save that for a time when your own ass is on the line. And then you're going to pull it out. And I'm going to cash it in for you. Right?
I don't think I have anything more to say to you, sir.
The country can't afford another scandal, Jack. To protect itself, it won't allow the possibility of another deception that goes all the way to the top. You'll take the blame. Cutter and Ritter will take some too, but it won't amount to much. They'll get a slap on the wrist. And then $20,000 an hour on the lecture circuit. The rest of the blame will fall on Greer. Oh, yeah, you'll take him down with you. You'll destroy his reputation. But that's as far as it'll go. The old Potomac two-step, Jack.
I'm sorry, Mr. President. I don't dance.
I expected him to hold his finger up, too.
Yeah.
How dare you?
Yes. Well, John Milius, one of the screenwriters, hated the end where Ryan's going to take his principles and go to Congress because it made it look like Congress was the noble body. And John Milius is like, oh, the Congress is a whole pit of snakes. There's no reason why this should be a happy ending with Ryan going before Congress.
Yeah, no good will come of that.
Yeah, in the novel, what happened was Ryan didn't go to Congress, but instead the president didn't run for re-election as kind of penance. So, yeah. And, I mean, there have been some comments, like on IMDb, how there are parallels between this and, like, Nixon, but nothing like parallels between this and, say, Bush and Obama. I mean, again, forget... You know, I mean, the whole point about the Contras and where Reagan and H.W. Bush, you know, got caught doing dirty tricks. Yeah, that's nothing. We're doing that every day now. Yeah, Oliver North's like, why did I go to jail?
Well, he went to jail because he lied.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
That's the thing. You know, you can get away with a lot, you know, but Al Capone didn't go to jail for being a mobster. He'd go to jail for tax evasion.
Yeah. Well, that's it. So, and O.J. Simpson didn't go to jail for double murder. O.J. Simpson went to jail for robbery, getting his own stuff back. And you know what? Let's pour one out for our homie Vincent Bugliosi, who died.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw that today.
Yep. Oh, and also the lady whose name I can't remember from Lethal Weapon also died this weekend. Or no, she died a couple months ago, but they just announced it.
Well, that knows it.
She was married to Robert Zemeckis, I think, which is why she was in Lethal Weapon.
I got no clue. But did you see Tim Curry?
Did I see? Oh, and the Facebook thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hilarious. It's true though.
I didn't know it. I didn't know he'd had a stroke.
Oh, I didn't. No, hold on. I didn't see anything. Tell me.
Oh, you didn't know? I guess Tim Curry had a stroke a couple years ago.
Huh.
And he's not in good shape.
Well, you know? Yeah.
And so he was on, he was accepting some award or something. They showed a picture, and it was one of those Inquirer-style pictures, and I was like, oh, I didn't need to see that. I mean, good for him that he's hanging in there, but like the Dick Clark thing, like, I don't want that to be my memory.
Well, yeah.
You know, God bless Dick Clark for hanging in there as long as he did, but having him awkwardly miscount the countdown, I mean, you know, brave guy. I have a lot of respect and credit for what he did while he was alive, but, you know, that, I didn't want that to be my memory.
So. Well, exactly. Yeah. There's a and you know what? I think that Clint Eastwood needs to stop talking.
Oh, is he up to, well, up to crazy?
Actually, role? It's not that he needs to stop talking. Somebody told him he was funny. He is not funny. He should not be telling jokes. He had that whole thing where he was doing that shtick with at the Republican National Convention last election, the where chairs. He talked to the chair. Yeah. Well, this I think his last comment was, I can't remember what he was at, but he made like kind of a Bruce Jenner, Caitlyn Jenner joke that kind of fell flat. And it wasn't that it was so offensive, that it just wasn't funny. So it just sounded like a grumpy old man.
Well, I think he probably is a grumpy old man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, anyway. So, anything else about Clear and Present Danger?
Yeah. I wish it were a better film. I think I wanted it to be a better film, and I think in my memory it was. I just don't think that it was all that good. So.
Yeah, Drew remembered it as a much better film than I think it is now.
Yeah, and again, it may be because it hasn't held up because of some of the politics that we have experienced since this movie, and you know, and I think this movie suffered from, I think I said earlier, the Cold War kind of ended, and so this movie may have suffered from some of that they tried to shift it to the drug lords and, you know, South America and it just and Mexico, and it just didn't. I don't know. It seemed hollow. It didn't have much of a soul, this movie.
Well, it'll be interesting to see because, you know, Hunt for Red October, Jack Ryan was a lot more action-oriented. I mean, he may be an analyst, yeah, but he definitely like a military guy trained in, you know, combat as well. And in Patriot Games, they definitely made a conscious decision in both Patriot Games and Clear and Present Danger that Harrison Ford was not going to pick up a gun. You know, he doesn't fight, really. I mean,
except he picks up a gun in Patriot Games.
Well, yeah, I mean, and yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. He does pick up a gun in Patriot Games.
But he doesn't carry a gun.
Yeah, and he doesn't, and he fights, but he fights reluctantly and only when he has to.
Right.
You know, he's not a forward-moving guy. He's more of a run and go look through books later kind of guy, which is fine. If that's so the character is, great. It'll be interesting to see next week when we visit the Jack Ryan as Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Whether they make, because I don't know if I've ever even seen the movie. If they.
The Sum of All Fears?
Yeah. Is this an action movie or is it a thinky movie?
Yeah, it's an action movie. It's got Morgan Freeman in it.
Yeah. Well, excellent. So.
I'm trying to think if Morgan Freeman plays Greer or.
That would make sense.
Because it's a reboot, or an attempted reboot, because it's a prequel. Because it's before, if I remember, I haven't seen it in a while, but I'm pretty sure it's before he's met his wife.
Okay, so that'll be interesting.
Which is interesting because then Shadow Recruit is even before that.
So we're just doing a Benjamin Button and Jack Ryan?
I think so, but I also think, you know, the Sum of All Fears and Shadow Recruit were, you know, were pretty far. Let's see. Sum of All Fears was 2002.
Yeah, so that's already 8 years later.
Hey, James Cromwell plays the president in that movie.
Get out of town.
No.
Oh, that's awesome.
Morgan Freeman's Cabot. Okay.
Okay, yeah.
No, James Cromwell, President Fowler.
Oh, see, that's fantastic.
See, you were just psychic. Some ESP.
No, I just want him to turn to Harrison Ford and say, "That'll do, pig."
I've never seen that movie.
No, I remember it being a cute movie. And of course, everybody is scarred. I don't think I've seen the whole Pig in the City. Maybe I have. Drew was scarred by it.
So Shadow Recruits 2014, so 12 years difference.
Yeah. So in the period of 20 years, it's two movies. I mean, that's a lot of room to kind of forget. So we'll have to go into it fresh.
And by the way, just you know, Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, Kevin Costner, and Kenneth Branagh.
Awesome.
And of course, Chris Pine is Jack Ryan.
Yeah, of course.
Mr. Captain Kirk.
Yeah, I got Chris Pine and Chris Pratt mixed up last night, or in my notes. It turns out Chris Pratt is a much buffer guy than Chris Pine.
I wouldn't know. When, I mean, certainly Chris Pratt is pretty buff in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. He's definitely buff. He's buff in Zero Dark Thirty.
I have no desire to see the Jurassic Park thing.
You know,
none.
It's interesting because I kind of want to, but I have. It's interesting because my memories of Jurassic Park are, you know, I read the book and I saw the movie, and then I read The Lost World and I saw the movie, and I'm sure I saw Jurassic Park 3 at some point. But the difference between, or I know it was the Books and Nachos podcast that was talking about the Jurassic Park book versus the movie, and how Michael Crichton, his dinosaurs are not cute. And his dinosaurs were like out of control from the beginning, and they were killing children and whatnot. And in Jurassic Park, you know, Steven Spielberg wanted to show you there's some violent scenes, of course, but he wanted to show you what dinosaurs look like. He wanted to bring them alive, because that's what Steven Spielberg does, is takes your imagination and brings it back to childhood and gives you these wonderful pictures. That's not what Michael Crichton wanted to do. He wanted to kill babies with dinosaurs and prove to you that screwing around with genetics is bad business. That was the agenda in the book. And in the movie, it's more like, hey, let's build dinosaurs. But I remember the character Malcolm, the Jeff Goldblum character, was fantastic both in the book and the movie. Could not have been played by anybody else. So,
not
anyway.
Huge Jeff Goldblum fan, so.
No, he's a weirdo, but,
yeah. I think the remake of The Fly is what probably kind of ooked me out.
Oh, definitely ooky, but cool. Oh, Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis? What's not to like?
Yeah, that movie creeped me out.
Let's see. So we have two more Jack Ryan movies coming up. And then we have a little bit of potpourri that'll actually be dependent on your voice. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.